Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine.
So we'll be joined by Mark Stevens, who is an architect.
So basically planning permission, we have kind of three sets of regulatory things that we need to get sorted when we're building a house. Planning is one of them. There's health and safety and building control, building regulations kind of thing. But we're going to focus on planning today. So something you'd obviously be very familiar with, people who are building or extending. So I guess the first question is just to dive straight in is to see who actually needs planning permission. When do you need planning permission?
Well, first things first, just to let everybody know that I'm an architect in County Mayo. I've got an office in Swinford in the west of Ireland. So my knowledge is based, even though I originally came from the UK, I've been here so long now that my knowledge would be entirely Republic of Ireland based. So if there's any questions relating to sort of Northern Ireland planning structure, I'm not going to be able to answer them. So who needs planning? In a residential sense, if you're creating a new house or an extension greater than 40 meters squared with other caveats, really, in a residential sense, that's who needs planning. Those are the people.
Okay. And also, I guess, if you have a house that's on the record of protected structures, that do you need planning for that if you're going to alter anything? Or can you still do a bit of work inside the house with those circumstances?
So if it's on the record of protected structures in the UK and Northern Ireland, it would be called a listed building. So when you say listed in Ireland, it's not quite the same word. It's protected structure in Ireland. So a protected structure, by its words, is protected. So to know what you can and can't do without planning permission is you can use what's called a Section 57 declaration. So if you send into the council, you should be able to download for your own council if you search for Galway County Council, Section 57 declaration. If you look for that, you can fill that form in and the council has to reply back to you with what can be done and what can't be done that affects the characteristics of the structure without planning permission.
Okay. All right. So then walk us through the planning process. Let's say I want to build a house for planning. What do I have to do to get planning permission?
Okay. What we're starting to recommend now is very, very early on, there's two things that you should be doing. If it's a greenfield site with no septic tank, is to get somebody to do a site suitability assessment. It's really critical. We're finding that's a big hurdle that people need to get over. And I'm now recommending people to do it earlier than I normally would. Normally, I would sort of get the sketch design done. But we've had a couple of instances where the site suitability assessment hasn't come back fruitful. So I would advise people to do it really super early to do that. I would also advise people to engage early with the planning process. So Ireland's got this great pre-planning structure. Most councils should do it for free, and they should do it like Mayo would do it on a simple little form. It used to be drop-in. I'm not sure whether it's drop-in since the pandemic, but certainly Sligo, Galway, most counties should have a free pre-planning consultation service. So I'd advise you to start that process early. That's the first thing. So then obviously you're going to engage somebody to do a design for you. There's a process that's involved in that. So we're assuming that you've got the great design, and the next step, once you have that design done, the person submitting the drawings for the planning application, when it goes in, there's a planning sort of validation process. So the planning validation process, it starts sort of like 2 weeks before the drawings go in. So 2 weeks before the drawings go in, the site notice is in the paper. So the notice goes into a recognized paper for that council, and the wording of it has to be exactly right. If you get any mistakes on the wording, any paragraphs missing, any words not correct, you're back to the beginning again. So that sort of starts...
spell check required then, yeah.
I'd say it would, but it's really easy to miss a line out. And some councils, I'm used to Mayo and Sligo, and some councils, the wording is slightly different to the site notice that goes on the site. So there's a laminated A4 sheet that would be on the site, and there'd be one that would be in the newspaper. And sometimes the wording can be slightly different. So you need to get the wording exactly right. So then that starts minus 2 weeks. The newspaper notice goes in, and you have a 2 week period then of maximum in order to submit everything within that timeline. Each council then have a validation checklist, and they're checking then against what you're submitting against that. If there's anything missing, anything incorrect, then this is only a bare validation process. Anything missing, you're back to the beginning again. Now, we've been doing this how long, 25, nearly 30 years in Ireland. So but I still get caught out sometimes. And I got caught out a couple of weeks ago. There's one, I think we said there's a extension to a house, and we said there's a demolition of a shed. And where are the drawings of the shed? Where are the drawings of the shed that we demolished? They're not going to be there. The shed's not going to be there. Where are the drawings of the shed? Oh, God. We have to produce a set of drawings for something that's going to be demolished. Nothing to do with the house. So then the validation process happens, and that they go through the checklist, and then they say, yeah, it's great, it's valid, and you'll get a registration number that's in sort of, it's in the system at that point. So we have a little glass of wine at that point that it's actually in the system. So the one that didn't go through, invalid, and it's the first one in about 10 years that's been invalid. So it's nice to get them in the system. Then
it's good to celebrate those milestones, isn't it? Even if it seems very small, it's good to...
The validity one is great to get them in and get them valid, because you know that they're in the system then. So then there's a sort of 5 week period for sort of making comments and observations on it by other third parties. It says that in the site notice as well about you're able to make a submission and observation. And then after 8 weeks, you'll then get one of normally four things that happens at 8 weeks. It's either granted, yay, we have another glass of champagne at that point. It's either refused, big tears and upsets. There's a request for further information where they're asking for something to clarify on the drawings, something extra information that they need. I'll go through some of the RFIs that we've had. I think in the East Coast, I think they call them AIs. additional information requests, but in the West Coast, it's requests for further information. Mm-hmm. And so you, they're asking then at that point for additional information, something to do with road safety, site visibility, adding extra reports for Natura reports if they're missing, extra information that's missing. You then have a maximum of normally 6 months to get that information together and then submit it. That 6 months can be extended by another 3 at the council's discretion. Normally you try and do it within 6 months. That extra 3 months thing, I think it's more for if you've got huge projects and then you need to get dozens and dozens of reports ready. So normally they do give you the extra 3 months if people can't get organized enough to do it all within the 6. So 6 extendable by 3, 9 months. And at that point, once you've submitted it, they have to give you one of the others, refuses or passes. Screen's just gone off. At within a month, so within that month, then they're giving you a notification. So that's 2. That's the 3. I've got one more to go. There's pass, refuse, request for further information, and one that's not that usual, which we've had a few times, is request for extension time request, where they're asking for more time to make the decision. The ones we've had where that's happened, they're asking for more time, but I think they've already made their decision, which is a refuse, and they just wanted more time to tell you that it's been refused. So I've only had a couple of them, not that many in 20 plus years.
And they all came back as refusals in those instances?
They did. Both of them did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think they've already made their mind up at that point. Hmm. I'm not sure why they don't just refuse it. Maybe it's a timescale thing that they aren't able to get the time to bundle up the things, they ask for more time.
Yeah.
So then you'll get what's called a notification of permission at that point. So we notify you, Dad, and this is a notification of permission. And the final permission then comes through another month later, which allows for appeals to onboard Planola and third party appeals to any, whether it's refused or passed.
Yeah. Okay. Process. Well, that's fairly comprehensive. So, the grounds for refusal. What are the common grounds for refusal? You did mention at the start to do the site assessment, early on, so that you know if you can get an on-site wastewater treatment system. So, that shouldn't be really a grounds for refusal if you've done your site assessment already and you know that it should be okay.
Yeah.
Can that still be an issue even as grounds for refusal, even if you think there is percolation?
I mean, it can be. We have people doing this. Well, I don't do the site suitability assessments. We've got other experts that we draw in for that. And they get awful upset when the planners go against what their reports are. They get very upset. So if for some reason that they go out there and there's normally, for that test, there's normally a hole at about 2 meters by 2 meters by 2 meters. If that hole is full of water when the planning officer goes out there and it's practically bubbling up out of it, it's not looking good for the application.
Yeah.
So it's obviously, if there are bad things in the report, it's not going to look good. It doesn't exclude things like completely. I mean, we're talking about sort of greenfield houses at the moment. You're going to ask Astrid as well about what ways could you help get planning permission. So one of them would be to use an existing house rather than creating a greenfield site. So you know that there's a house there. It's even better when there's a septic tank there because obviously the tank's already there. And even if it's a substandard one, at least there's one there, and the EU guidelines would be that you could upgrade it rather than starting afresh on poor percolation.
So. Okay. And other grounds for refusal then, in terms of locals only rules, it's quite controversial, this whole thing about...
Yeah.
So explain a bit of that and how you've come across those scenarios.
Well, we haven't had that many refusals. Anybody that says, oh, we have had none, either hasn't been in the game long enough or done enough applications. We've had probably a handful that have gone to refusal, not that many. And the reasoning behind them. I'll backtrack a little bit that I said about doing the site suitability assessment reports. The other reports that would be needed would be things like Natura habitat reports, like the EU habitats. That's a critical report. If there's anything, so obviously the first one would be Natura reports, site suitability assessments. If that's failing, it's not looking good. Natura reports, if there was some type of animal there, like a corncrake or some other type of Natura that needs to be preserved, then that would be another issue. If it's on a floodplain, you would need to be doing a flood risk assessment. So again, that would be if there was a flood risk assessment, then and if it's on a floodplain and there's a risk of flooding, that's a possibility for refusal. The one that, so once you've done what, so you can see here, there's experts that we're bringing in. There's one for the, and they may be the same person. They might. We've got a couple of people. I know one of them definitely does all three of those reports, where you've got flood risk, site suitability assessment, and then the Natura reports. There can be one, there can be two, there can be three. So you need to factor in that there's money involved in doing reports.
Of course.
The one,
but you would need to do all of them, really, if you're building on greenfield site. You would just really need the site assessment. The flood risk assessment would only be in an area that's prone to flooding, I presume. Wouldn't be everywhere.
You're right. You're dead right. There's maps, though, and part of the pre-planning advice of getting pre-planning is that they can help say, oh, you wouldn't need the flood risk assessment.
Yes. Oops. The phone, it paused the mark. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I'll just send the call off there.
And so how much would those, when you're saying it costs money, how much would
depends on the person. I mean, like, generally the site suitability assessment is somewhere around the 500 plus sort of digger cost. So and the other ones probably about the same, maybe more, maybe 1,000. I'd have to dig them out. And not something that I get involved in. So have to dig out what the costs were, maybe 1,000, something like that. They'd have to shop around, and each person is different. I wouldn't want to give exact numbers for different things. The one thing, so an answer to your question, Astrid, about the reasons for refusal, one that is sort of, I summarize it in three things. Once we've got sort of like, if it's not Natura report sort of problematic and it's not flood risk problematic and the site suitability assessment looks really good, then you've got two other things that sort of would sort of flummox the application. The first would be the design. So obviously you want to get somebody that's trained well and that understands architecture, that understands good sort of rural design principles, and to do a nice design. Obviously, me as an architect, I'm recommending that they do go to other architects. If you go to riai.ie, there's a whole list of architects across the country. You do a search on county-based, and you can come up with a whole list of them. So that's my recommendation, would be to get an architect, obviously, if I'm an architect. That's what I can do. So I can do the design, and I can do that. That's part of what my training is. So I can't do anything with the ground. I can't do anything with the Natura habitats. I can't do anything if it's on a flood risk. And then the other thing that I can't do much with is if there is site visibility problems. So when, and again, this will come down into the county development plan, that the county development plan would have set guidelines on a rural site. When you are stepping back from the edge of the road, how far can you look up the road and how far can you look down the road in two different directions? And it depends on the speed of the road. So the worst case scenario will be something like 120 meters. Now, that's a long distance, 120 meters, to be able to see. Some councils, I don't know all of them, I know Mayo does this because that's the council I work with the most, that they're saying, okay, we want 120 meters, but we want 120 meters within your own site. So that's, if you had worst case scenario, that's a 240 meters minimum road frontage, or the site triangle is going either into the hard shoulder or it's going sort of in the road, you know, like it needs to be either within your site or within sort of like that, the sort of the piece that's nobody's land on that road edge. So that's hard to actually get that. So we've had instances where people have either had to buy that piece of triangle, or they're given it, or we show it as part of the road. You know, it's very, very problematic. So it's that, that's a key one for us. In answer to your question about, I think you mentioned about local, was it sort of like local needs? Local needs.
Yeah, local needs. Is that something you come across much in your parts? I suppose it's quite common in like the Wicklow and things like that. But
constantly. So the county development plan sets out the guidelines for local needs, and for Mayo, what they have is, obviously I'm talking about Mayo because I know Mayo quite the best. Other surrounding counties, obviously we're putting applications in for, my areas would be sort of Sligo, something Galway, Roscommon, but Mayo would be my focus. So County Mayo in the development plan has got a map, and that map has shaded areas, and the shaded areas denote areas called rural areas under urban pressure. So rural area, it's a rural area, but it's too close to a sort of urban townland, like sort of Westport, Ballinar, Swinford, Castlebar. It's too close to them to not be a part of the town. It's rural. So they don't want like urban sprawl. They want you to be building in the town centre. So, but, or a rural that is under sort of an undeveloped rural area. So those ones would not be shaded, and you would be allowed to build in those areas. So the Mayo County Council has that map. You can see where your outline is, and you can see the shaded area that you wouldn't be able to build in that area unless you were from your parental home would be within 5 kilometers of the site, have a real need to be living in the area, whether you're a nurse or whatever, and you have to live there. So there's a whole list of, there's about 4 things that you'd have to be in order to qualify for that, and other counties would have exactly the same thing. Sligo would have it, and you know, similar things, and I'm guessing Wicklow would have exactly that, and probably some more spring.
And so on in the areas that would be shaded green and good to go, then there shouldn't be any locals needs requirements then those areas.
Perfect. No, they shouldn't be. You shouldn't have to. Normally, if it is a local needs restricted area, you'd have to, well, the ones we've done, we've had showing a map of the parental home to the site, showing the distance. And it can be exactly as the crow flies. We've done it so that it's not like road distance. It's a distance, crow across the ground, 5 kilometers, and so that would be on that map. So anybody within that map. Oh, well, the other things so you have other things like going to school records. We've had loads of different records proving that you have a need to be in that area.
And does it work? Did those applications get approved? Those ones you did.
We've had them approved as long as they do fulfill the requirements. Yeah. If they're 20k out from, we've had ones that are on that. I mean, they have been sort of reasonable as well. We've had ones at sort of 5.5, 6k, and they said, "Oh, it's sort of not like it does say 5k." But we've had ones that are there has been a little bit of leeway. But I'd work to the 5k rule. That's what in Mayo. Other counties would be different.
Okay, and you mentioned requests for further information. What kind of other things were there in your experience, just some examples of common ones you come across?
We've had ones for site visibility, nature reports, as I said, flood risk reports. We've had one that was more urban that had to have a shadow study analysis of the effect of the house upon the house, houses either next door. So you're using software to generate the sun path and to show what shadows were cast across the neighboring windows. We've had that. We've had other ones that where they used to ask for sort of putting up profile poles, and they've been doing that recently because of computerization and being able to generate CGI imagery. So they've started to ask for that less. We have one, what was the last one that we did? Probably 4 or 5 years ago, where they want you to put up a pole of the height of the sort of ridge, the height of the ridge and the height of the eaves in the place that where it's going to be, so that the planner can sort of drive by the road and see the what the impact would be of these poles. But now we've got computers. One of the things that we've had recently is where they've asked for like a CGI image of like an impact of the house upon the hill. I actually dug one out prior to this live stream, and I hadn't checked it. It was 2016 where this was asked. I'll redact some of the words. Mayo County Council has concerns with the site location of the proposed development in this regard. Please submit a photo montage to assist in adequately assessing the proposed development, having particular regard to the site's elevated nature. The photo montage should reflect the completed development when viewed from the east. So we did that, and we like, I suppose you could get somebody that would produce sort of fake CGI imagery, but we wouldn't want to do that. It's part of our professionalism to make sure that we do it correctly. And it got refused because it was the moment that the planner saw the house against the hill, they just said no. So no, it's impossible to.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Each, like, I know Mayo would have a what's called a rural house design guide, and that design guide, the sort of granddaddy of all the design guides, was from Cork County Council. I think it's still
from
in
way
print.
Back.
Way back.
Yeah.
So all of the ones came, a lot of the ones came from that. That's where they started from. And the Mayo one is a lot of it was started that process. So Mayo would have one. And so what I was saying about being an architect and being understanding the rural design guidelines, so that's what you're trying to get towards, is somebody that understands how to design and how to create something that the council would find acceptable. Now, these the design guides are not done by sort of amateurs. They're like, I know the person that's done the one in Mayo, and like, qualified architect with exceptional design skills that knows what should be built within County Mayo. And the principles of what are in that are everything relating to sort of scale and massing and depth of building. And one of the key things that that design guide emphasizes is that it doesn't restrict sort of contemporary design that's in scale and in proportion. And in the massing of it is acceptable. So it doesn't preclude contemporary design.
So massing is bulkiness, or how would you define massing?
Yes, bulkiness is the bulk of the building. So like for a rural house, and this would be the same across every council. So Cork started it, and the other councils would have followed online after that. So if you had, for example, what they're trying to get, you've got to think of the history of Ireland and the history of housing, what traditional housing would be. So you would have had sort of pre-famine cottages, famine cottages, the congested board cottages that would be a depth from front to back on that gable. I mean, like you would have gone down to the small ones, like 5.5 5.5 meters. So obviously that doesn't allow, if you had just 5.5, for any circulation. So 4.5, 5.5. So you're looking at depths around something around, we've had them in just outside Westport at 6.5, sometimes generally around 7.5 to 8 meters, probably about the maximum. So you're trying to go back to something that's more traditional and away from something that's 19 sort of 70s onwards, that would be deep planned, where you would have like 10, 11, 12 meters deep of depth of plan, because that's how they could now do trusses and how big the roofs could be. So you're trying to get back to something that's more more shallower in depth. The trick then comes is that, we still need to have the accommodation that fits into the house. So how do we get sort of like 4 bedrooms, the utility room and that, within that depth? So that's where the massing comes in, that you break down that bigger mass into smaller volumes that either could be connected, maybe some courtyards, maybe an L shape, different ways of connecting and making a larger space within a smaller mass, within a smaller density of the massing. Mm.
Okay, and there's a question there that I spotted about the difference. So if you get planning permission, obviously for a specific design with, you know, window placement, certain types of finishes. What's the wriggle room to modify that once you go to build the house? Is there any wriggle room in terms of, let's say, if you're in terms of finishes or where the windows are? Did you come across any projects where things were changed and it was okay to do so?
I think it's inevitable that some things change. The bottom line is, at the end of the build, and unless you're using cash, $354,000 cash from your back pocket, if you've got a mortgage involved, then the bank needs that certificate that it is compliant with the planning permission through the engineer or the supervising architect. And in that document that is the compliance with planning, it says sort of, it doesn't have to be completely in accordance with the drawings, it's sort of substantially, and it's saying that would not sort of contravene any of the planning acts. So, and it comes then down to the call of the architect engineer. Does the person certifying it, is it small enough that it's very, very, very minor? Or is it substantial enough that it requires another planning permission? So my advice would be, if you think there's two ways about this. If you think that you're making changes, my advice would be, the last thing you want is, if you ever sell the house in however many years time, if you ever come to sell it later, you don't want that hassle of trying to get a retention permission. Mm-hmm. In a moment, Ashley, remind me to go on. We just went through the process for like a straight planning application. There's also outline planning and retention permission, which we might need to discuss as well. So that process of it's down to the call of the architect and engineer certifying it at the end. But the last thing you want is you trying to sell it and forget about whenever anybody says, oh, we're never going to sell, we get this is our forever home. That never happens. People always, well, not everybody, but like, there's a lot of people that we've had that they haven't been forever homes, and they've ended up trying to sell them, and it's a hassle. So there's two things that you could do.
Well,
so
even if you do stay for your own kids or whatever, you don't want hassle for them.
You don't want hassle for them. Mm. No, you don't want hassle for it. So what you could do is, it depends how far along it is, whether it's actually built or not. So obviously, if it's built, you could get retention permission for it. So it's already done. There's a risk, however, that you might not get the retention permission, depending on what you've gone and done. So they say, no, you have to put it back the way it was, back to planning, back to the planning compliant drawings. You could do that. If it is, you could get a retention permission on completion, hassle and more money, and they triple the costs for any retention permissions. So they're effectively three times the amount for a permission. You could just rely on the certificate of the architectural engineer. Again, if there's a lot of changes, if you come to sell, the bank may say, no, we're not, the other person buying the house may say, no, that's not compliant, we need a retention on it. Or you could do what's called a Section 5 declaration. A Section 5 declaration is when, before something's built, does this work that we're thinking of doing, does it require permission or not? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether, I'd have to check this, I'm not sure whether how you do it for a house that's already been granted permission. We normally use Section 5s of things like extensions when they're under 40 square meters. And just to clarify, does this proposal require planning or does it not require planning? So yeah. A Section 5 is similar to a Section 57 that I mentioned earlier about protected structures. And Section 5 is to find out whether something requires planning or doesn't require planning.
Yeah. So then, but let's say if, is it okay? I mean, in my understanding was windows, you can't really change too much position wise, size wise, or is there that wriggle room?
I want to say what would be in and what would be out. It's different for every case. Yeah. Every different scenario is going to be different. So every case, maybe a window gets slightly narrower and the call of the planning officer is, or when the person certifying, that isn't a big effect.
Yeah.
To me, I think you should have a risk-free sort of life and go and get planning again. Once you've got planning the first time, it's easy to get it the second time. It'll go in, and 8 weeks later you'll have it. Yeah. It's just that you delayed it by 2 months. But for the peace of mind, we tend to find people that with peace of mind, there's people that are risk takers that don't want to go back in, and there's ones then that they'll say, no, I don't want any risk. I want to make sure it's all above board and get it really nailed down.
Yeah. So downsizing, if you have approval for a big house, we got a question in there. Can you downsize the house? Be the same, but just smaller? You'd have to go back for planning for that, would you?
I mean, really, yeah. I mean, we actually had, to just give you an example of where you think, oh, this is really handy that you're making it smaller. So technically, it's not the same area. Even if you're making it smaller and better, then it's a different house. It's not the same house. My neighbor, looking that way, we did the design for that. And it was done originally back in, I don't know when it was, 2001 or two. And it was effectively a huge dormer. It had a front to back distance of about 15 meters. And I said to the owner, Mary, and I said to Mary, I said that your house is just going to be a monster. I said, I've got a great idea for how you could improve the design without much effort. And she was just about to build it. I've got this great idea, and it's improving it. And the way, exactly like I just said, it was reducing the depth from 15 meters down to 2 7.5s. We put a valley down the middle, and we had like the old sort of schoolhouse look about it, where it'd be a double pitch going up and down. And I thought, this is the building is not as high, it's not as deep, everything about it was better. The planner came out when I think there was a time extension that they needed to get things built before the planning ran out. She came out and said, that's not the house that got planning. I go, it's better. And she goes, doesn't matter. It's not the same house. You need to now get a retention. I think the roof was on at that point. And the letter that you get, this is when I didn't know as much when I first arrived in Ireland. The letter that you get is really frightening. It sort of says, stop, this is the enforcement letter notice. Stop work now. You're liable to a fine. And the fine was something like 93 million euro.
Oh Jesus!
It's a really scary letter. You don't want to get those letters. I've had a couple of them when clients have carried on when they shouldn't have done, and I'm less upset about the letter because I know that there isn't going to be a fine of 93 million, but we need to get it sorted. So we need to rectify it.
Yeah. So just extensions quickly, just to run through that. Technically, really, it's just under 40 square meters, you're okay.
Yeah. But
that counts any previous extensions that have been done in the house already.
It does. Over the years. So, but generally, in answer to your question, that is generally 40 meters squared, where the previous extensions pre sort of post 1963 would need to be taken into account. Mm-hmm. Then there's other rules about heights of things, distances to windows. There's a whole load of stuff. But if you are in any doubt whether you think that your development requires planning or does not require planning, then you should get a Section 5 declaration.
Yeah.
That sorts it. And you've got a piece of paper then. If anybody then says, oh, you need a planning for that, you need a planning for that, you can go to them and say, look, here's my piece of paper, here's my Section 5. Any problems that occur with any type of planning occur when, A, that you've done something that you shouldn't have done and the planner comes out and has a look. They're not driving around the countryside looking, as far as I know, they're not driving around the countryside looking for buildings that are non-compliant. That's the first thing. So if you do anything and they have to come out and they see it, they'll obviously it has to be regularized.
Yeah.
Two, if you've got a neighbor that really wants to make your life difficult and you've done something wrong and they are contacting the council. We've had one where it was constant contact to the council and I was drawing upon drawing to verify that, first of all, that the extension was less than 40 meters squared. It was like 39.99999 meters squared. It was right on the number. And they said, right, fine. And then there was a garage that we did that was 24.99999 meters squared. And that went through. But the moment that a neighbor complains, it causes problems. The third one is when you come to sell it. When you come to sell and the person buying it's got their solicitor, got their own architect, got their own engineer, and they're looking at the documents and they're looking at what's being built on the ground and there's problems, or whether you haven't adhered to the Section 47 thing about the council and stuff, then it will cause problems.
Okay. A question here, just looking to make significant changes to planning permission I've already received. Would you recommend lodging an application for planning amendment or a brand new application?
The wording that we would use is, it depends if sometimes we say minor changes to planning granted under PL XX/225, whatever, you can do them as changes to this. You could say reduction in size of this thing, whatever you're going to do. It depends how different it is. There's also an application for change of house type. So you could do a planning application, change of house type on the form. So change of house type. If it's completely different, if your site has the benefit of planning permission already, your application would be a change of house type. Just quickly looked at it. It's also citizens information. I'd say Ireland has got the best citizens information of any
website
of any
country. In the world. I know
it's so good.
There was also a thing about LVAs.
It's a landscape and visual impact assessment. I think I've never heard of that in an Irish context.
Okay.
I think it may be a Northern Ireland thing of actually being called that.
It sounds like a Natura or something.
Yeah, what we had was that what I read out was Mayo County Council has concerns about the impact to do a photo montage. They never mention LVIAs. Okay. But in answer to your question, how much is nil? We do LV. We do photo montages. We do them. I've got a young person that makes them do that, undertakes them for us. Normally they're an extra cost. It depends on the size of the scale. Sometimes we do one, two. We can do animations. We can do videos. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It depends on the size of the project. It depends on how complex it is, how much detail there is involved. So yeah, we do the photo montages too.
So the visual impact assessment, someone was saying they were asked to do a visual impact assessment. So that's what it would be called in the Republic.
Yeah, that
so
will.
It is what you're saying with the photo montage and all that.
Yeah, visual impact assessment. But I think also when I Googled it, I looked it up on the landscape and visual impact assessment by the Landscape Institute. It's actually more than that. It's actually a report and things, but we tend to just do the visual that's needed.
Yeah.
Like the photo montage. And the photo montage depends on the complexity, as I said. We've done them for 500, 600, something. It's not an unbelievable amount of money. Mm-hmm. Depends where you get them from.
Okay.
I'd say it varies from a few hundred to a few thousand. So it depends who you get.
Thanks very much.
I'm just looking. Actually, I haven't been reading any of the comments, but somebody then, I just saw one flash up that said somebody.
Oh, they would flash up for you. I tried to catch all of them.
Yeah, no, I think somebody said it was 4K. So, but that would be, I'd say that's a big report. And it'd be interesting to know what council that came under. Mm. Certainly for visuals, what I said would hold. But for a big report, 4,000 probably doesn't sound unbelievably expensive. I mean, we've just been finishing conservation reports under the pilot scheme, and they were about that amount. So it depends.
Yeah.
And what goes one simple visual. I mean, that was all that the capital. I was looking at the FI here. One photo montage. That's all they asked for. Mm. So one photo montage is easier than a 50-page report on something.
Yeah, obviously. And do you find the costs have gone up on reports like everything else, or is that just because it's been a long one?
I tell you what has been hard is getting people to do things. Right. It's been really difficult getting anybody on site to, from engineers to do foundations, from people doing site suitability assessments. It's just taking a long time getting people. The prices haven't changed that much, but it's because we're in a market that's so, so busy. Mm. Getting people to do anything is really, really hard. Like, we're turning away more work than we're taking on. I am picking work that I want to do now, so which is different to when it was in 2007 or 8 or so.
So it's good for you anyway.
Yeah, it's excellent. Yeah. Can't complain.
Very good. Listen, thanks a million, Mark. Appreciate
it.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.